This is the Plant Yourself Podcast. I'm Howard Jacobson of PlantYourself.com and WellStart Health. This podcast is part of my mission to help you live a trippy and transformative life. So I'm welcoming back to the show today, Carly Asse, Juan Carlos Asse. He was actually number 15 right when I started this show. And we talked then about his amazing transformation. You should go listen to that one. We don't get into that story pretty much at all in the current interview, but if you want the backstory, he was sentenced to a fairly long prison term for dealing drugs and transformed himself in prison, came out a healthy plant-based fitness trainer, and the rest has been history. I talked to him shortly after his first film had come out called Unsupersize Me, which was him helping a friend of his, Tracy, lose a couple hundred pounds and become fit and healthy through his exercise regimen and a plant-based diet. And we've stayed in touch over the years. And most recently, he gave me a set of exercises to do that has pretty much obliterated my plantar fasciitis. And so I'm more or less pain-free, back to running, doing this probably 10 minutes three times a week, and it's made a huge difference in my life. And so I thought, hey, let's see what he's up to. So what he's up to is two more films. The second one was Unsupersize Us, and this time he took a bunch of people from his hometown of Gainesville, Florida, and they weren't obese like Tracy had been, but, you know, 30, 40, 50 pounds overweight and with significant chronic disease. And he wanted to show that through his regimens, lifestyle, diet, exercise, that you could get off the meds. And he showed that in that documentary, Unsupersize Us. And now he has coming out Unsupersize Me in Cuba, which is a Spanish language film that chronicles the transformation of a guy he met in Cuba. He wanted to produce something of value for the Spanish-speaking population of this country and of the world. And so we just got on the phone and I'll admit that I sort of geeked out a little bit on the filmmaking aspects and asking him all these questions about, because, you know, his first film, I think it was like $4,000, and he did everything himself. And I'm kind of into that. It seems like a lot of fun. So forgive me if we end up talking a lot about documentarianism and filmmaking and all that. But we also talk about his philosophy of change, how he helps people change, and how people can get these results without having to be in a film that he has directed and produced. Before we get to the conversation, what are the items of business for today? Again, one spot left. This is a hard spot to fill for the Josh Howey retreat, which is coming up November 14th through 17th. If you want to find out more about that, it's going to be a 2.5-day immersive experience. We can think of it as intensely casual, or perhaps casually intense, where this is going to be like us living the life, plant-based mindset, movement, life. So if, you know, you're looking to really jumpstart, to really have experiences of health, and not just read about it, watch documentaries, you know, look up recipes, this is it. Find out more about it at sick2fit, that's the number two, sick2fit.com/retreat. Second thing is coach training begins this coming November, so next month. If you would like to become a wicked effective health coach, whether you're already a health coach and you'd like some more tools, some more arrows in your quiver, or whether you just want to make a career change and become a health coach and you'd like the best, most cutting edge methodology possible in the shortest amount of time, or if you just want to like help family and friends the same way you might learn, you know, auto mechanics, just to change the oil in your car and your family's car and be able to do tune-ups and things like that. Health coaching is a remarkably fundamental communication skill. And so if you're interested, check us out at wellstartcoach.com. That's all I can think of for now. So let's get to our conversation without further ado. Carly Asse, welcome back to the Plant Yourself Podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be back. It's been a while.
It has. It's been, I think it's been over 5 years.
I think it has been. Yeah, right about there.
So I've never done anything this long. So I'm kind of impressed with myself, seeing that I've kept it up. You also have been continuing on the path. When we had talked, you had just released Unsupersize Me, a movie about a transformation based on plant-based eating, and someone under your tutelage as a physical trainer.
That's right. So it was plant-based eating and exercise, and she lost 200 pounds in a year.
Right. And I remember, and people can go listen to that interview, which is still up in the archives. So I kind of, people should pause and go listen to that, and then we can, they'll be up to date. So first of all, what did the movie do, for the original one, for you and for other people, for the movement? Like, what, you put a ton of time and energy and money into it. What returns did you see in any domains that are important?
My number one return that I was looking for was to show as many people as possible that there is a way out of that. That's easy and very, it feels good to do. You're not suffering at all. You're not hungry. And it completely changes your health and, what you can do physically as well. And it reached so many people. There's over 3 million views now on the film.
Wow.
It's just, it's changed so many people's lives. I get emails all the time of people who have lost over 100 pounds. I think the biggest loss is one guy lost 260 pounds after seeing the movie. So it's really changed a lot of people's lives, which was my main goal. I never expected it to get as big as it did. It got on Hulu and it was getting like up to 15,000 views a day. And I wasn't expecting that. It just, a lot of people really related to Tracy's plight. And they realized that they could change their life when they saw it.
Mm-hmm. And so the 3 million was like Hulu. It was on Netflix or Amazon. Like where do people?
That's just, one measurement. So now you can see it on Amazon, on Google. I don't actually have access to all the numbers, just the numbers that I am able to see. It was about 3 million on YouTube, Amazon Prime, Google Play. Hulu was the main one, which was on for like about 9 months. It's on Health Matters Network. So it's really more than that. Those are just the ones that I've been able to see that people have seen the movie.
Great. And so what stories have you heard from people?
Well, just that they thought that they were stuck being obese or unhealthy for the rest of their lives. They thought there was no change for it. A lot of them are just taking conventional medicine for things that can be fixed just by being healthy. And so it really has changed a lot of people's lives in that sense, that they thought it was impossible for their health to change. And then they try plant-based and exercise, and voila, they're healthy and feeling good again.
So, I mean, one of the points, the stories of the movie is that you're her trainer, and you're right. Kind of, in certain, like being hard on her in certain ways, like, there's definitely like, the training montage scenes and there's times where she's like, despairing and ready to give up. How did people take the message that they could do it as opposed to they needed you to make them do it?
Well, I tried to make it clear that it's really something that anyone can do. Obviously, her training was elevated a little bit because she was with me. I also provided a course that goes, a lot of people are interested in how they can do it themselves. And so then that shows people, the first workouts Tracy did, they're very, very basic. And I outline exactly what they would need to do on their own as well. So you wouldn't need a trainer. So I try to make that clear that you don't have to have a trainer to do it. You can do it on your own very easily.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So then you made a second movie, I guess, with some of those stories.
Yes. So the second film is called Unsupersize Us, and that's, the more vast majority of the population, which is not obese, just people that maybe have a belly and 30 or 40 pounds to lose. But there are so many people on medication, blood pressure meds, sleep apnea, Crohn's disease, a couple of digestive diseases, depression. And those, a lot of those issues can be fixed just by changing your diet and exercising. So that's what I was really trying to show more in the second one, was not the aspect of weight loss. I mean, we had good weight loss. They all lost 84 pounds in 6 weeks between the five of them. But the main thing I wanted to show was that those medications could go away. Because, you know, a lot of people hate the side effects of medications and they don't always really fix the problem. They just sort of, you know, maybe alleviate some symptoms, but then give you some other health issues. So I was trying to show that you can really get rid of a lot of medication through eating a plant-based diet and exercising, and it worked. It was 6 weeks, and then I had them do 6 weeks on their own, which they continued to lose more weight and were able to maintain it. So when they were doing the 6 weeks on their own, they weren't working with me at all. So that was also a way to show, like, you know, you can continue this on your own too.
Gotcha. So what did you learn from the first movie that you applied to the second one?
A lot of things. A lot of it had to do with more like filming, how to take better shots, how to, you know, the first movie, I would just whip out the video camera wherever we were. I didn't really know about sound and lighting.
And were you the main videographer?
Yeah, I did it all. I did the music, the video recording, which is hard to do when you're on camera too. I did the editing, so I really got a lot better. Because the first movie, I didn't even know how to edit. I didn't until I got done filming everything. It took me about a year to really put it together to make it a film that could be displayed on any kind of platform like Hulu. So I learned a lot in that arena. I also learned more about, in general, just things that people like to eat. Foods that are really popular for plant-based eating. The exercise routine, I did take that from Unsupersize Me. I found that to be the best exercise routine you can use as far as maximizing your results in a quick way, which is a combination of the cardio and the weight training. So that really stayed the same. The production, I guess, was the thing I learned the most about from the first film.
Were there any shots that you wish you'd gotten in the first film that you?
Absolutely. Yeah, I wish I would have. One thing I'll tell you, that brings up a good point. I learned that you have to film everyone fat and unhealthy a lot in the very beginning because you don't have that for very long. They start changing so quickly. I wish I would have had more of Tracy when she was fatter and more unhealthy. Yeah.
And I'm guessing that's the hardest time to put someone on camera because they're not comfortable with themselves and they don't know you that well.
Exactly. So in the beginning, and she was, you know, there was this sort of strange relationship where we were friends and I was helping her train everything. And then when I recorded, I could tell she was like, oh, we have to record this. Like, it kind of reminded her that we were doing this movie and I was trying to document what was happening. So, I also had no track record at that point. Now, when the people do the films, they already know that I know what I'm doing and it's going to be a real movie. You know, it's not just some crazy guy filming them. So now it's a little bit different. I mean, they pretty much do whatever I say and follow the plan.
I guess that you having the confidence makes a lot of things that could be awkward a lot less awkward. You're just matter of fact about them now.
Right, exactly. And then having seen what happens also, they already know what happens. They've already seen the previous movie. So that makes it a little bit more easy for them to dive in.
So how did you choose the five participants for Unsupersize Us?
They were various people that I was associated with. One was my music teacher. One was a longtime good friend of mine who owns a tennis racket club in Gainesville, who's always wants to lose weight and trying to get healthy. And there were two other, one was a girl I've known a long time, who was a local teacher. and my mom was best friends with her mom. And then the other person was an English girl from England, actually, that was helping me write both my books, the recipe book. She came in. It changed her life when she saw the movie. And then she was like, hey, I loved your movie. She wrote a really great article about Unsupersize Me. So I just told her I would like to also do a book sometime if you're interested. And she was. So she came and started like doing the whole Unsupersize Me plan, having great results. So then I decided to put her in the movie also. So it was sort of just, you know, different people I know that I knew would want to do it.
Did you think, were there people that you could have included but didn't because of whatever?
I think everyone that I asked wanted to do it. I didn't really have to go for, I didn't really want to do more than five people because that was going to be a bigger project I'd want to take on. I mean, each person is in their own right, you know, a lot of work to film all the time and stuff. So I didn't really run into, I haven't ever run into wanting to film someone, them not wanting to do it. Actually, now what I run into is a lot of people wanting to be filmed. And
yeah. Well, see, that what I'm thinking of is I went a long time ago, I went to see Penn and Teller, the magic duo on Broadway. And during intermission, Penn, the tall guy, was walking around looking for people in the audience to be volunteers in their next act. And like, I really wanted to do it. Like, I was raising my hand and he chose my wife, who's like quiet and shy and was not going to make any trouble. And like, I'm thinking, like, you have to, like, are there things you look for or try to avoid when you're thinking about it? Because there's a huge commitment.
Exactly. Yes, I have to make the judgment, like, this person really does want to do this. They do want to change. So that is a judgment call that I've been successful with so far, 100%. And the reason is, you know, if you pick the wrong person, that's really going to be a huge waste of your time and resources. So, I do have to make the assessment of, are they dedicated? Do they really want to change? Usually you can tell if someone is really tired of being the way they are, you know, they're unhappy with their health or their body or the way they feel. Mm-hmm. And they do want to change. So that's sort of like my own little judgment call that I make.
Uh-huh. Do you find the wanting is enough?
Yes. Well, it all has to come with being inspired and wanting to change. Because if you want to do it, it's, as you know, I mean, it's great. You feel great. It's easy. It tastes great. And I believe it's really the way all humans are supposed to eat. So I think that once you find that path and you see the results, you feel so much better that there's no reason for you to go back.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if, because, you know, I'm with a company and we work with people, and a lot of people, you know, people tend to come in motivated, and it's often not enough, that there also needs to be like this, like self-efficacy, like people come to us after they failed 3,000 times. Right. And I'm wondering if your movie, that people have seen the movie, that's becomes a non-issue. They're like, oh, Carly can do these miracles with anyone. And they're kind of giving you their self-efficacy for a little while. And then you kind of have to give it back to them.
Yes, I think you're exactly right. And there is an element to that they do always have to have seen the first movie. That is a requisite, because I do want them to understand what they're going to be doing and that it is going to work. So yeah, I think there could be an element of that. And then once they find that way and they see the path and they're like, oh, well, this is not only not hard to do, but it really works. And I feel much better. That's been my experience, that it's, you know, it's something that they want to continue to do.
Mm. So how do you help them deal with the typical things that trip people up even after they've been successful and they're like, yeah, I get the food, like, you know, family gatherings, alcohol, the things that pull people back into their old ways?
That's a very good question. So, this is actually what my mom taught me when I was young. She always said, okay, Carly, well, you know, if you're gonna eat McDonald's with your friends or whatever it is you're exposed to that's not healthy, just pay attention, go ahead and do it, and pay attention to the way you feel afterwards. And you sort of, and you, I became very in touch with when I felt good and when I didn't feel good based on what I was eating. So for me, when people ask, well, how do you, you know, not eat a, you know, a big chocolate cake or a pizza when you see it? Well, I have eaten that stuff, and I know what I'm going to feel like after I eat it. And to me, it's not worth it. It's almost like, you know, volunteering to be sick or something. You know, why would I want to be sick if I don't have to be? Mm-hmm. So that's what I try to make them do, is be in touch with the way that you feel when you eat that stuff. I don't say, don't you ever eat that again. That doesn't work. You have to allow them, like, hey, you're at a family gathering or something like that. Sure. You know, eat the food that they're providing you, and, or at a party or a celebration or whatever, but just be aware of the way you feel when you eat it.
But there are people, you know, who are addicted to drugs and alcohol and gambling and pornography, who know how they're going to feel afterwards, and they know that it's not good, and they do it anyway. Do you look out for, like, you know, people who have been using these substances for, you know, really powerful emotional psychological reasons? Can you, how do you navigate that, that they're using this as a crutch, as a medicine for something else?
That's a good question also. And I have, so obviously Tracy had a major eating addiction. And I had not really encountered that at that level before. And what I try to do is to get them to replace. And in the second film, I had a couple girls that were emotional eaters too. And I try to, my goal for them is to replace those foods that they like to eat with something healthy. If you want to go and pig out because you're feeling upset or whatever, do it with, you know, broccoli or apples or whatever, something that you like. And so I try to make them make that mental switch that when you are going to do that, do it with something, a healthy food. Also, when you're dealing with an addictive personality, you know, you need to have someone that you can talk to when that type of thing is going on. For all the people that I work with, I am that person. Mm-hmm. But I think it is important, when you do have some type of addiction, that you have someone to talk to talk some sense into you, you know, to, hear what you're saying, and listen to them, and, try to help them get off that path, because that is going to come up again. Obviously those pathways are strong in their brain, and it is going to come up again. And there's also, you know, an aspect of those people needing some sort of, psychology, some rearranging of their brain. Mm-hmm. And I am not a professional in that area, so I do the best that I can. But you know, some of them may need to get some sort of psychological help for those issues.
Now, you focus on food and exercise. It feels pretty equal. Like they're both, like, you know, legs of the stool. They're the two things that people do. There's a lot of research that the food is like the biggest contributor to, especially around weight loss and even some of these diseases. What do you see as the benefits of exercise, of physical exertion, either, you know, psychologically or physically? Because I agree that the physical is really important, but not in the way that, not in the calories out way that people think about.
Right. I agree with you. So the exercise aspect, I'm going to use myself as an example right now, because I just had knee surgery for a torn meniscus, and I'm on crutches for 6 weeks. So it is very difficult for me to function at the same level mentally. I certainly don't feel as positive as I normally do with exercise. I think exercise is very important to help you deal with stresses every day. You have that endorphin release, and I find that I think more clearly, and I do better with everything when I'm able to get that endorphin release in my brain from doing exercise. And physically, having the strength to do everyday activities, to be an active person, I think is very important for your psyche and for your confidence. You know, if you feel like you're going to have trouble getting out of the bed or going up the stairs, that has a negative impact on the way you view yourself, the way that you talk to people. There's a lot of things that change when a person feels strong and confident and able to do, you know, different physical activities. So I think there's an aspect to both of those for your mental psyche that are very important. As far as the physical results, you know, exercise has definitely been scientifically shown to help with your brain. It's positive fighting against disease, against so many different things. So I think the two of them tied together, I would say if you had to pick one or the other, yes, nutrition, you need to be eating plant-based. That's the number one thing. I always say that's the best thing I ever did in my life was going plant-based. But I think exercise is not far behind. It's something that definitely needs to be done to really lead a truly happy life.
Because right. I've something I've discovered through, you know, coaching with Josh Lajani. Do you know Josh?
No, I don't.
No. So he's the former 420 pounder from Louisiana, ex-football player, you know, fried food eating, whiskey drinking guy who discovered plants and running and was on the cover of Runner's World at the end of 2016.
I did hear about him. Darcy told me about him.
Yeah, right. That's right. So, Darcy is one of our star pupils.
Yes, one of mine too.
we have to talk about Darcy a little bit before we close the conversation. But like, so I would, you know, we would be coaching people, and someone would come in and say, "Oh, I had a slip up. I, you know, at work they had the donuts, or I went out with my family and I was stressed out." And so I would immediately go to coaching them about the food. And I'd be asking him all these questions like, were you hungry? And what were you thinking at that moment? And Josh would just say, how's your movement protocol going? And they'd be like, yeah, it's been a few days. He's like, yeah. Like, he's just like, it's, a, you know, eating and exercising have nothing to do with each other, and they have everything to do with each other.
Yep, exactly. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. So, did the people in the second film, were you working with them as a group at all? Were they getting group support, or is it just you one-on-one like you were with Tracy?
Yes, there was both aspects going on. So some of them would train together at the same time. It was really based on schedule because everyone had jobs and different schedules. So some people would work together for the workouts, but then we would have group challenges, physical challenges. So we had basically there was like a point system to where, you know, if you would win certain challenges, like we had a 1 mile run, a 3 mile run, a stadium challenge, a rowing challenge, push-ups. There was all types of different physical challenges going on. We also did an Iron Chef challenge for cooking, so they could all display their skills that they had learned of cooking. And that was a really good scene because we had 1 hour. And they were given beets and eggplants. And so they had to make whatever dish they wanted out of beets and eggplants. And then they had to make a dessert out of, I think it was papaya, some sort of dessert with papaya. So it was really, that was really cool to see how creative they were with those ingredients and how much better their cooking got since when we started the film. So there were both group and individual challenges.
Gotcha. And when did filming end for Unsupersize Us?
It ended, I want to say, about 2 years ago. It's now just been released on. It takes a little while for the distributor to get it on the different networks. It just got on Food Matters Network and Google Play and Amazon Prime. It's on like an Apple. So it's on those platforms.
Gotcha.
It's been done about 2 years, I think.
Gotcha. So when your people who were in the movie see the movie? Like, did you have a screening where you they kind of like looked back? Like, it must be so weird for them.
They we had a screening here in Gainesville, and they all came, and it was it was impressive to see what they could do at the end of the film compared to the beginning. And that one was a very short period of time. So, in 12 weeks, they really were able to, do so much more physically than they had in the beginning. And they felt much better and lost a bunch of weight. So, they were involved in the Q&A also when we, at the end of the screening.
Gotcha. And how are they doing now? Are you still in touch with them?
Yes, a lot of them, Liz is in England, so I don't see her. I do talk to her some, but, she's continuing to run races and do lots of physical things. The other people are doing great. You know, they put down a lot of medications and are feeling much better. One of them is a good friend of mine, so I see him. I play tennis with him every Friday. So it's I think all of them except for one of them still train at Zen. And so I do keep up with them still.
Uh-huh. I bet the tennis player kicks your ass while you're on crutches.
He does. I don't stand any chance against him. But when I get off the crutches, he's in trouble.
Right. So now you are working on, or you finished a Spanish version that you filmed in Cuba?
I have finished the filming aspect, and now I'm editing the film. So that was obviously that was a little bit more challenging because I was going to Cuba to do the filming, and I was not able to be with him for the training. I was only able to be there a week at a time and to show him what to do, but then he had to do it on his own.
And who's he?
What's that?
Who is he?
His name is Ridiel Perez.
Ridiel Perez. So you picked one person in Cuba. How did you find him?
So that's kind of a funny story. It's actually related to Unsupersize Us because the winner of all the challenges, which was my buddy that I play tennis with, Don Blair, I told them the winner got to travel anywhere they wanted with me at the end of the film. And so we ended up picking Cuba, and I'm half Cuban, so I sort of push for that, but I let him have whatever he wanted, but he was okay with that. So we went there, and we first got there, this guy says to me in the airport, do we need a ride? And we did. We just flown into the airport. We didn't know, you know, where we were or what we were doing. So he gave us a ride, and he started talking to us, and he said he was a guide. And I really liked him. We became friends, and I went again to see him a few months later because I wanted to travel a little bit more around the country. And he started telling me about how he was feeling really bad physically, that he, you know, was his blood pressure was really high. His doctor told him he was pre-diabetic, you know, all the classic symptoms. And I just said, you know what? I want to do a film in Spanish anyway. And you would be the perfect person if you want to do it. And he said he wanted to do it. So the next time I went, we started filming.
Wow. And so is it still just you, the only one working, holding the camera and all the equipment, or do you have more help now?
I had, I did have my a friend of mine, Adam Dubin, who also does film. He went with me and helped me film when we were there, which was great because it made it so much easier. But I am still involved with that stuff, but not as much with the filming aspect. I still am doing the editing, the sound, and everything else.
Uh-huh. And so what did it consist of? You couldn't train him and you couldn't feed him. So how did you, like, that's more like my life, right? Like, I'm working with people that I have no leverage over.
Yes. So, I had to, you know, I did the initial thing where we go shopping and I explained to him, you know, what you can eat and what you can't. And then I did, you know, did the cardio with him. So he understood what he was going to be doing. And I showed him how to exercise his entire body. And I gave him the program. I said, okay, we're going to be back. You know, I'm going to be back in a few weeks. So, you know, we're going to measure you and basically make, you know, there is an element of like when you're on film, like there's no hiding, there's no excuses or anything. It's like either you're doing it or you're not doing it. I would keep up with him. I would communicate with him through WhatsApp, but he, you know, he did not falter. He felt much better immediately and he wanted to continue doing it. And he also was a smoker. You know, a lot of, I'd say, geez, it seems like 80 or 90% of the country smokes over there because, you know, they have Cuban cigars, they have all this tobacco. And that was a harder thing for him to give up because the first time I went there, he was pretending like he had given it up, but he hadn't. I mean, I could still smell it on him. And so then he was weaning down, but it's, yeah, you know, it's a really hard thing to do. So he finally did get completely off of the cigarettes. And the interesting thing is he made it to the United States finally, and now he lives with me. So that's another thing I haven't added in yet to the end of the film, which I'm going to add in at the end.
Wow. So what one of the raps about plant-based is that it's expensive. And I know, yep. You know, Cuba doesn't exactly have a thriving capitalist economy. What was it like for him to suddenly limit himself to unprocessed plant-based options, both, you know, sort of in terms of convenience, in terms of what's available, and in terms of, you know, his wallet?
That is, that was a concern of his initially. And I always try to explain, like, you know, to create meat is actually a much more expensive endeavor. And Cuba is not like, they're not just reeling out like, you know, all the cows like we are. They're actually, you know, you see the cows on the side of the road and they're it's actually a 30-year prison sentence if you kill a cow. All cow are government owned there. So it's also very expensive to eat meat because it's more, it's not like they don't have any subsidies like we do. So it really is not that expensive. They have, you know, they have like grow houses everywhere growing all different kinds of vegetables, and they only have stuff that's indigenous to the country that grows there. So it wasn't really, he did have money problems, but that didn't have anything to do with eating plant-based. That just has to do with being Cuban. That there's money is very scarce.
Right.
So,
but it sounds like in Cuba there aren't the false, you know, the subsidies that make meat and, you know, potato chips look cheaper than broccoli.
Exactly. Yeah, because it's, you know, they don't have those big cattle farms or anything like that. It's like they're using their land. And it takes years and years to grow a cow big enough to kill it. So that's obviously expensive. You know, it's not the same as having this government subsidies here to make it cheaper.
Gotcha. So one of the things I find interesting about these, you know, documentaries about big change is, for, you know, sort of like I'm watching the documentary, so I kind of know it has some sort of happy ending, right? Like they don't end up like really like tragic, like, you know, the person doesn't get hit by a bus 2 days before their last weighing, like it, you know, the, right. Alex Honnold doesn't fall off of El Capitan, like, right? Yeah, I kind of know, but there's still, because you're watching it in real time, there's all this, there's narrative tension, and I'm curious what you learned as a, you know, as a videographer and then as an editor to make the film interesting without making it seem harder. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes, I know exactly what you're saying. It is, what I do is I show, the hardships they're dealing with in the beginning, because then you're showing, someone that a lot of people can relate to, and also someone that is undergoing hardships, and it makes the viewer cheer for that. For them, they're like the hero of the film. And, you know, and you have to show their struggle in the beginning because it is a struggle when you're making those changes, you know. And
so you're like, what do you look for when you show, you know, what do you look for when you're, when a film scenes that show their sort of, I'm thinking like hero's journey, like, you know, the ordinary life and how it's suboptimal.
Yes, the hero's journey is actually, I actually had to read that the first time I was doing Unsupersize Me. Because I had completely like reversed the scenes, and I I had in my head, I was like, I'm going to do each scene of her fat and then of her at the end. And the audience did not like her seeing her be fat again. So I had this one guy that was a local school here. He's like, you need to understand the hero's journey, Carly, when you're making this film. So I completely had to rearrange. I actually had to do 14 edits to get it to where it was the final product. But you have to show their struggle in the beginning. And then I show, you know, their successes. And, but then you'll see like, you know, some struggles towards the end also, that they're, you know, trying to reach a certain goal or whatever they're trying to do. That's the end, the winning, them being successful. So even though it's a documentary, the way that the video, or the professor told to me was that, you know, you have to follow this plan somewhat of the hero's journey, because that's the way stories are told. That's what I've been told for many, many years. Right. So if you try to deviate outside that, the human brain has a hard time processing it.
Yeah. So how did you decide what to film of the, you know, the before stuff, and, you know, to really visually show, because, you know, like someone could be in pain or be uncomfortable or be depressed, but that's not really good cinema.
Right, exactly. What I like to do is I like to do voiceover of them talking about what their issues are, and then show them either in their everyday life of what they're doing, but then you'll have them talking about what they're dealing with. And I found that's the best way to show their struggles without showing like someone in, you know, in bed in pain or you know, not able to go to the bathroom, whatever their issues are. You know?
Uh-huh. Did you find that they were articulate about their struggles, or were they, did you have to kind of prompt them like this is like their normal life? And so they weren't, you know, they weren't making it hyperbolic enough for your purposes.
Yes, I have had both of those types of people. And some people are very open and they'll tell you about whatever's going on with them. And then some people like Tracy, for example, I had a really hard time getting her to talk about her struggles. She wanted to, in the beginning, say that she was, you know, basically fat and happy. This is the way her family was, that she had a very normal life. And it wasn't until she lost all the weight that I really got into her mind and said, now, okay, let's talk about what was really going on. Tell me about what it was like to be made fun of when you're fat. Tell me what would go through your mind before you'd walk through a crowd. And so after she lost the weight, then she opened up and I said, look, Tracy, you know, all obese people are feeling these same things. And this is the way that you're going to help them. So when they can see that you went through that too, then they're going to say, hey, I can relate to this person. I can do this. But it was very difficult for me to get her to do that in the beginning. She would not do it when she was fat, actually. So I didn't really, at the time, I didn't even know how to make a film. So I wasn't even thinking about that. I was just thinking, let's just get to the result, because the video will show it.
But I do remember, I haven't seen it in a long time, but I do remember there was something about like the rest eating in a restaurant.
Yes.
I remember that like hitting me in the gut.
Her not being able to fit in the booth.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. And like she desperately wanted this social life because she clearly was like this fun loving, people loving person.
Yes.
And I remember. And
that was what would happen to her when she would go on dates. So when she told me about that initially, she talked about it like it was a, you know, like it was these were just a normal thing to go through. Oh yeah, you have to know you can't go in these booths, you can't sit in these theaters. And I knew that if I filmed it, that despite the way she was talking about it, that it was gonna, the viewer would see, you know, what it was that she was going through. And she had rationalized it to herself that this was a normal thing. And then, of course, later on, when I got her to do the voiceover while it was going on, it was more realistic. She felt comfortable talking about it because she had now escaped it.
Right. So, I mean, one of the, you know, the driving forces in narrative, in a lot of narrative, is irony, where, you know, we, the audience, know something about the character that they aren't aware of, that they're you know, they're not self-aware. And obviously, the people who are coming in 50, 60 pounds overweight on medications, there's ways in which they are unaware. Do you think about somehow capturing their internal changes?
I don't. I mean, you hope that that's going to come out in the film, but it's like, as a documentarian, you have to be. I have to be careful to not, like, I don't try to push them in any way. I want them to come up with those realizations on their own. So I don't really script or try to show something that they may not know about themselves. I mean, if it comes up, it comes up. That's great. But it's not really something that I have control over. Does that make sense?
Yeah. If there's something in terms of like, if you're just if like I'm thinking about, like this is an action movie essentially. Like they couldn't run, now they can run. They couldn't lift the weight, now they can lift the weight. And there's a way in which that level is kind of, sort of shallow teenage boy blockbuster. Whereas what you're looking for is, Die Hard, where the character is all conflicted and then he has some realization that brings him to his new, like he has to change who he is in order to achieve the new thing. And I'm wondering
Yes.
whether that's something that you think about as you are filming and editing.
No, because that part has already happened usually. By the time that they know they have these certain struggles, and they're already acknowledging, like, I have to do this. This is the way I'm gonna get the change. So it's not there's not really any conflict on following that path anymore. But I mean, that's the way I've done the films. That would be a cool thing to show, though. That would be a cool thing to show.
So, what's next for you? What are you,
The next thing is finishing up editing this the Spanish movie, and I'm thinking about doing a different distribution model for this one. I've decided. Because my whole purpose in doing these is just to help people find a healthier way to live. So I think I'm just going to put it up for free on YouTube and just let everyone view it whenever they want for free. And I've actually thought about taking the other ones off. Hopefully my distributor doesn't hear this. But I've thought about taking the other ones off and just putting them up for free also, because I just want as many people to see them as possible. So that's going to be a little bit of a different distribution plan that I have, which is just letting people see the film. After that, I don't know. I mean, Zen Fitness is a constant, ongoing thing for me, and I have a lot of people that I'm helping daily. So the next film, it's like I don't really have a plan for it, but sometimes it will just present itself to you. And I'm sure I will find something when I'm done with this one.
So when you're between films, are you like constantly just like being a filmmaker anyway? Like either shooting or scouting location or
Yes, I am, and I've gotten much better at that. So I like the Cuba film is going to be the best B-roll I've ever had by far. It's just beautiful. So that when I was there, I was thinking, like, what a great place to do a film. I was thinking that ahead of time. I was looking at the beaches and the jungle there and just the culture, So that is all going to be mixed into this film. I've got like salsa, him dancing, like having a hard time when he was fat, and he's already a good dancer. So obviously, when he loses all that weight, it's quite a transformation. So yes, I am. I guess you could say I'm always sort of recording and filming things and documenting them. And you get more of an eye for it, over time.
Gotcha. And so one of the things that really impressed me about this was how much you did by yourself, right? Like it's what you did. I mean, it's crazy amount of hours. So, a huge commitment, but also like it seemed accessible. Like anyone could do something like this. Like you weren't hiring, a Blackmagic 6K camera and a crew and a dolly and stuff. What if someone's out there and they're like, you know what, I want to do like a 10-minute movie and I want it to get kind of play and distribution. Like, how much do they need to spend? Do they need to buy, $5,000 prosumer cameras and you know, body cams and gimbals and drones?
No, absolutely not. So I'll tell you, I did Unsuper Size Me for $2,000. So all you need is you need an editing program, which I use Final Cut, which is last time I checked was in the 300s. I would say you need some sort of a nice camera, reasonably nice. But I mean, now I can do a lot of the filming with my Pixel because it gets great. You know, I get probably three or four times better picture with my Pixel than I did with the camera I did on Super Size Me.
And that's just the Google smartphone.
Yeah, Google smartphone. So I use that a lot because when you're on the move and you're doing things, it's a much easier, you know, you can get a little tripod that hooks it up nicely and you can use that. So I would say you don't need to spend a lot of money. The most important thing is good content. If you have good content, that's the ultimate holy grail is good content. So if you have a good story and you want to tell it, you can do it. It's really not that hard.
Now that you've gotten into, the hero's journey to help the narration, do you have any inclination to do like fictionalized stories?
You know, I have thought about that. And I don't know if I would, my parents were in that. My parents did that. I was in a film when I was really young. I was an actor in a film. And it is tough because you have to redo these scenes over and over again. And it's such a big budget thing. I am interested in it and I would consider doing it if the right opportunity presents itself, but I'm not really pursuing it.
Cause I think about, even like a film like The Game Changers or Forks Over Knives, like these films, these sort of, one has changed society. The other one I expect will, that they're still nowhere near as powerful as a fiction movie that sort of has like the little subplot in it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you're right. That would be really cool to somehow work in plant-based in a fictional movie with a badass hero,
Right. Cause the people who eat vegetarian in movies are generally it's to make fun of them.
Right.
Right. Like the plot is like the uptight skinny girl finally finds happiness by eating cheeseburgers.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. Yeah. You're giving me good ideas, Howard.
Oh, cool.
I'm going to have to try and work that in. I'm going to have to think of some kind of script. I have been thinking about writing a script recently, actually. It's funny that you say that. I just, I have to just find the time to sit down and do it.
Cool. So before I let you go, I want to talk about my right heel.
Okay.
Right. So, I've been pretty vocal with my people about like, I'm not running and I'm posting my walks on Strava and trying to be okay with that. And Darcy, our mutual student and friend and inspirer, mentioned to you, I guess, that I had this, really painful plantar fasciitis. And you gave me some exercises to do that are making a huge difference. And so I wanted to how do you know this stuff? What's the difference between like some trainer who's just going to help me get strong and what you do, which felt like if I went down and trained with you for 6 months, like I would heal a whole bunch of stuff.
Yes. A big difference is I have about 25 years experience doing it. So I've honestly, it's the same thing like with the editing program. I have done a lot of trial and error. And so I have seen a lot of the same problems present themselves, right, with people. So I have, you hear a lot of things, like I see people, walking with lifts and trying these different shoes and stuff that I never really see work for anybody. So my idea was, if you would strengthen and stretch the foot, that, we should as humans be able to not have sore feet everywhere we go. And so I had all my clients doing that stuff and I saw it working every single time for them. So it's I guess I have a really advanced or understanding of the human body because I've been doing it so long.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working out for so long.
Yeah. Cause you know, I do a lot of running, right? So, you know, marathons, ultra marathons, like that's a lot of training time. And I have really neglected the strength workouts. And partly I tell myself, like, I don't want to go to the gym and get a trainer. I don't really trust them to help me be well. I trust them to help me become like strong, but there's a way, I think there's a way in which you view a certain type of strength as health.
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
Yes. So for me, to be truly well, you need to be able to do cardio, which I always say, you know, you should be able to run at least 3 miles. You should be able to do a pull up, a push up. You should be able to do, I do like, a certain, leg squat exercise, like, low body squats without loading your spine for a certain amount of time. You need to be able to plank for a certain amount of time. So there's basically, for each major body part, there are certain milestones you should be able to hit to be a truly, well, healthy, fit person. Because otherwise, if you get into this imbalance of like the huge strong guys, like I think what you're talking about, where they can't even run a mile, you know, and to me, that's not healthy.
Yeah. Or just all the guys who go to CrossFit who end up like tweaking their backs.
Yes. And you know, you see that, that's a whole nother subject that I have an opinion on of why those people get hurt all the time. Okay. And then you see it on the other end where you see like the runners that can't do a push-up. So, you know, and they get hurt all the time too. So I think there needs to be a balance of both included with flexibility also. Mm-hmm. And that's how I structure all my training programs. It's like that's why I call it Zen fitness. It's like the Zen of fitness. You know, you need to have all those different pieces of the pie to be truly.
So how does someone who doesn't live in Gainesville get started? And I'm thinking particularly about me. Like I really, you know, I was talking with Garth Davis, with whom I wrote a book, and his pal Spencer Nadolski, who's a you know, a well-known doc who's like really into weightlifting and does all these like, you know, shirtless Instagram lives, and I can see why. And like, I feel like the universe is telling me, like, dude, time to get strong. How do I start without you know, like without knowing, like I know you and I trust you and you've helped me, but you know, how do I get started without injuring myself?
So, first of all, I would have to do a general assessment just to see what you're. I think that you have a general knowledge of fitness. So I think with those exercises, I mean, within 30 or 45 minutes or less, if we did a Skype session, I could show you the exercises, and those staples are the ones that you need to focus on, because I don't think you're trying to like, you know, become a huge muscular guy. You just want to be strong in your entire body for what you're trying to do.
Right. Yeah. I feel like there's some core instabilities. I have imbalances when I run. So, you know, to figure out how to like, you know, turn the right hip muscles on, stuff like that.
Yes. I mean, and all that stuff is not, it's not hard. It's just that you just need to know what to do. Mm-hmm. So, I could do something like, maybe I could do a little film with Darcy showing you those exercises. And then you would have it, so you could do it.
Okay, well, that's good for me. What about other people? First of all, do you work with people over Skype, or are there things like, is there accreditation that you could recommend for people who just want to start getting stronger locally?
There's no accreditation I have, unfortunately, because you know, your concern about there being not a lot of good trainers, that is true, and so I can't really like recommend someone if I don't know them.
Mm-hmm.
I do one-on-one Skype sessions. There are some people I've actually trained people in Saudi Arabia and Pakistan via Skype.
Wow.
I also do that. It's obviously, much easier to do in person, but as long as I can see your a full view of your body, then usually I can coach someone through it.
Cool. I think that's your next movie. It's called Howie Gets Abs.
Howie Gets Abs. Okay. Yeah, we could see, you know, what we could pack on you in a 6-week period.
I'm in. All right, man. Anything else going on that we should talk about before we go?
I think we got it all covered.
Cool. So how do people find you, follow you, stay in touch with you?
I am on Instagram as Carly Asse. And then usually I do another one for the film, but usually I have the website Unsupersize Me that has all the my books and my course on there. So either unsupersizeme.com or they can follow me on Facebook or Instagram.
Okay.
And I always share what's going on, and you know, if they want to watch the movies, how to find them.
Great. And if they want to find out about your Zen Fitness gym.
Then they just call into Zen Fitness, the website, thezenfitness.com. But if you look up Zen Fitness in Gainesville, there's a way to contact if they are interested in doing the training.
Okay, so the website is thezenfitness.com?
Yep, that's
okay.
Correct.
Or they can just go find you on Google Maps or something and just call up.
Yep, if you look up Zen Fitness in Gainesville, we're the only one, so they should be able to find me.
Awesome. Well, Carly, it's great catching up with you, and thanks again for helping me. You know, I'm still walking. I think it feels responsible to rest it, but I'm up to probably 70 pounds in a backpack, and I'm going up on both feet and then down on the one that's affected. Is that all right?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
So I'm trying to go down slowly.
Yeah, did you get one of the pro stretches also to stretch it?
I did.
Okay, good. Yeah, man, you're on your way. Just keep adding weight and keep doing, you know, the three directions with your feet, and
three directions?
Yeah, the toes pointing outwards, toes pointing inwards, and then toes straight ahead.
Oh, I missed that part. Toes outward. Yeah. Maybe we should take this offline and people won't have to listen to it. So point it like Meaning, externally rotated, internally rotated.
Yes.
All right. I got more work to do.
Okay.
See, this is the benefit of Skype.
Yeah.
All right, Carly. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Howard. I appreciate your time.
Oh, pleasure. Talk to you later. All right. I hope that conversation was fun for your inner documentary film buff. Interesting timing because, you know, next week, I believe on the 16th of October 2019, The Game Changers is going to be available for streaming on Netflix. And, well, you couldn't imagine two movies more diverse in their origins and funding. The Game Changers, this high budget picture with all these thousands of people involved in it, and then Carly with his little, you know, iPhone doing everything himself for just a couple $1,000, and God, there's room for so much on all the ends and in the middle for all of us. You know, if you think, well, I couldn't make a Game Changers, I don't have the skills or the resources or the connections or the money, well, you got an iPhone, and that's what Carly thought. You know, he just had a little cheap camera, and I think it's cool. I think I'm a little inspired to go do some more slightly higher end video work myself. So if you would like to know more about this episode and about Carly, you can check out the show notes at plantyourself.com/343. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to support the mission of the show, you can do so in so many ways. You can subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. You can become a patron of the show over at patreon.com and just look for Plant Yourself, or you can go to plantyourself.com and look for the Patreon button on the right sidebar. Becoming a monthly supporter of the show gives me a tremendous amount of stability in my ability to know that there's money coming in, that I can really devote energy and time and passion to this project without having to worry, always looking over my shoulders about, all right, where's the next dollar coming in from? So I really want to appreciate everyone who has already become a patron. And of course, I speed say all your names at the end. So if you'd like your name added to that august list, that's how you do it. What else? Oh, I got some good shows coming up for you. I've got two shows with people who have made great plant-based transitions. One of them is Brittany Sade, whom I met at the Triangle Veg Fest, and she's got an amazing story. And the exciting thing about that one was that she's in Raleigh, North Carolina. So she came out to Sun Studio here, and we recorded with video and had a conversation face-to-face. So none of that awkward Skype delay. I ask a question and she starts answering before you hear me finish the question and all that sort of thing. Also, a conversation with Margot Freitag, who managed to resolve her own childhood asthma, severe asthma, with a plant-based diet and with lifestyle. And we get into that as well. And then one of my favorite authors, who wrote a book that I regard as kind of a manual for how to live a decent, effective human life. Her name is Caroline Webb, and the book is called How to Have a Good Day. So in, I think, 3 weeks, my conversation with Caroline, also videoed, so YouTube and podcast, will be available for your enjoyment. And a bunch of other things in preparation. They're not in the can yet, so I'm not going to jinx them by talking about them yet. All right, in garden news, we are in the process of making a koi pond. So having a little more fishy life in our backyard. We had some fish, but it was also in a lotus pond that wasn't big enough, and there was not enough specificity in what we were trying to do. So with the help of a neighbor, we are going all out koi. I've been digging, my back hurts, and hopefully we'll figure out how to do that right. In running news, had a decent run on Sunday. It was a 10-miler, 2-mile warm up, 2-mile cool down, and so 6 pretty decent miles in the nines. That felt really good. And as I said at the beginning, thanks to Carly's help, I'm not having any heel pain. So thinking about a 10-mile race at the end of this month, not quite sure yet. We'll decide and we'll let you know. Okay, thanks. Thanks to Will Ridenour for allowing me to use Sabali Dawn, the Dance of Peace, as the theme music for this show. Check out willridenour.com for more of his gorgeous Kora music. And of course, thanks to all of you Plant Yourself podcast patrons. Kim Harrison, Lynn McClellan, Anthony Disson, Brittany Porter, Dominic Morrow, Barbara Whitney, Tammy Black, Amy Good, Amanda Hatherley, Mary Jane Wheeler, Alan Kennelly, Melissa Cobb, Rachel Burns, Christine Nielsen, Tina Scharf, Tina Ahern, Jen Vilganovsky, David Bizek, The Mysterious Michelle X, Elspeth Feldman, Victoria Dolomanova, Leia Stoller, Alan Christensen, Colleen Peck, Michelle Landry, Josina, Julianne Roland, Stu Dolnick, Sarah Durkas, Ramses Circus, Kelly Cameron, Wade Patterson, Leanne Peterson, Janet Selby, Claire Adams, Tom Franzik, Jeanette Bedham, Gila Sarah, David Donahue, Blair Cyborg, Dora Naviso, Gio and Carol Argentati, Jody Friesner, Ruth Ann Funderburk. Misha Rosen, Michael Warbeck, the equally mysterious Tracy Z, Alicia Lemus, Rebecca Hughes, Val Linneman, Rise with Cinnamon, Nick Harper, Stephanie Holmes, Martha Berger, Nicole Ramsey, Susan Amon, Molly Levine, the Inscrutable, Harry R., Susan Laverty, the Panda Vegan, Craig Kovic, Adam Sharp, Karen Burry, Heather Morgan, Ashley Corcoran, Kelly Machia, D.N. Norton, Bonnie Lynch, Plant Happy Oregon, Sabina Kurtzels, Nigel Davies, Marion Blum, Teresa Koble, Shell Rutledge, Julian Watkins, Breed O'Connell, Brian Sheridan, Shannon Hirschman, Kate Rosalind, Dayat, Julie Langholm, Hedegaard, Ezra Susan Watt, Connie Hayline, Aaron Greer, Alicia Davis, Aviva L., Heather O'Connor, Carolyn Jensen. Sherry Orlikoski of Plant Powered for Health, Karen Smith, Scott Marani, Karen and Joe Crabtree, Tanya Lewis, Kirby Burton, Teresa Carell, Kevin McCauley, Elizabeth Rothschild, Kelly Baker, Miracle Ann, Jesse, Cheryl Dwyer, Jenny Hazelton, Valerie Pethier, Heater W. Evans, Colleen Harrison, Justine Divitt, Joshua Sommermeyer, Dennis Bird, Darby Kelly, Lori Fanny, Linnea Lundquist, Valerie Hummel, Deb Casilla, Emily Iaconelli, Levy Wallach, Rosamund McAtee, Dan McCorney, Stephen Leland, Patty DiMartino, Mike and Donna Kartz, Deanne Bishop, Bill Brielf, Gunter Schmidt, Marjorie Lewis, Kelly Molden, Trisha Adams, Ian Kramer, Nancy Shelton, Lindsay Vaisher, Gunmarie Hagen, Tracy Gullidge, Laura Heaton, Meg from Mama Says, Rochelle Kennedy, Joan Borstein, Diane Goldman, Stacey Stokes, Ben Savage, Michael Kay, Holly Butler, David Hughes, and Connie Rogers for your generous support of the podcast. That's it for this week. As always, be well, my friends.